I have thoroughly discussed with my attorneys the changing circumstances concerning the interview. And based upon their unanimous recommendation, and let me tell you, it was absolutely unanimous among all of us.
And here comes some free advice for those of you who are hoping to make it into elite circles. You don't call them taxes. You have a different name for them. What you call them is, to quote the New York Times, multi-million dollar reductions in subsidies for the city's mass transit system, and education and higher education. Of subsidies, like if taxpayers in New York use their funds to pay to have transportation, that's a subsidy by definition, sort of illegitimate. So you cut down those subsidies to mass transportation, like subways and education and higher education, which is precisely equivalent to taxes. Somebody's going to pay, except highly regressive taxes. The mayor of New York finally came clean and said what everybody could see was happening. He said the idea is, Mayor Giuliani, he said the idea is to drive the poor people out of the city, that they don't belong there.
Conversations entirely without ever opening our mouths. She called it shiny. And for a long time, I thought it was just the two of us that had to shine to us. Just like you probably thought you was the only one. But there are other folks, though mostly they don't know it or don't believe it.
Now let's go back to where we were when we broke last night. We had started talking about the messages.
I concluded that this is not the appropriate time for me to speak.
How long have you been able to die? Why don't you want to talk about it?
I'm not supposed to.
Who said you ain't supposed to?
Tony.
Who's Tony?
Tony is the little boy that loves my mom.
Is Tony the one that tells you things?
Yes.
So General Mutual has a very comprehensive $200,000 life policy at a net annual cost of $2,400.
You see, the thing is, we were really hoping to buy a boat.
Mr. Gordon, as a young husband, I think you're going to find that your new responsibilities to your family take precedence over your recreational needs.
But this is a really good boat.
You don't get it, do you, kid? 2 years from now, while driving down Route 91, coming home to your wife and baby daughter, you're going to be hit head-on by a drunk. Driving a blue 87 Mustang. You'll end up looking worse than 60 feet of bad road your body slides across after flying out your front windshield.
Mister, you really need to work on your closing technique.
To the ride.
Yeah, okay. Bye.
Bye.
New games in a couple of months. And the programs for them are probably still on their computer. So I told my system to search for other computers in Sunnyvale, California. They answer with a tone that other computers can recognize. Here.
You're calling every number in Sunnyvale? Isn't that expensive?
There's ways around that.
You can go to jail for that.
Only if you're over 18.
Is this going to take a long time? I'd like to get my grade changed.
It's funny, actually, because I already changed it.
I told you not to do that.
Yeah, I know, but I figured you'd change your mind. I didn't want you to flunk.
Well, what did I get?
You got a D.
You gave me a D?
No, you got an A. I was kidding.
Oh, well, that's okay.
Here, let's see what we have so far. Excuse me.
Really give me an A.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Gotta make a note of that one. Might come in handy someday. Ten a.m. Where should we go?
Anywhere?
Anywhere.
New York?
New York? Okay.
No, Paris. Paris.
Mm. Will you be traveling alone?
Yeah. No, you wanna go?
All right. Smoking or non-smoking?
Non-smoking.
Non-smoking. All right, Miss Mack. You're confirmed on Pan Am's flight 114, leaving Chicago's O'Hare Airport at 8:15 a.m. on 18 August. Do we need a rental car? No.
Are we really in tickets to Paris?
No. You have a reservation, though. Doesn't identify itself. Huh. Try anything.
How does it tell you things?
It's like I'm asleep and he shows me things. But when I wake up, I can't remember everything.
Does your mom and dad know about Tony?
Yes.
Do they know he tells you things?
No, Tony told me never to tell him.
Has Tony ever told you anything about this place? About the Overlook Hotel?
I don't know.
Now think real hard, Doc. Think.
Maybe he showed me something.
Try to think of what it was.
Drowning, are you scared of this place?
No. Scared of nothing here. It's just that, you know, some places are like people. Some shine and some don't. I guess you could say the Overlook Hotel here has something about it. It's like shining.
Is there something bad here?
Well, you know, Doc, when something happens, it can leave a trace of itself behind. Say, like, if someone burns toast. Well, maybe things that happen leave other kind of traces behind. Not things that anyone can notice, but things that people who shine can see. Just like they can see things that haven't happened yet. Well, sometimes they can see things that happened a long time ago. I think a lot of things happened right here in this particular hotel over the years. And not all of them was good.
What about room 237?
Room 237?
You're scared of room 237, ain't you?
Why?
Mr. Allen, what is in room 237?
Nothing. There ain't nothing in room 237. But you ain't got no business going in there anyway. So stay out. You understand? Stay out. Thank you.
was right or wrong, I couldn't sing that song anyway. Oh, but darling, now I remember how the sun shone down and how it warmed your green smile when I was there. You're the one I talk about, you're the one I think about everywhere I go. But sometimes, honey, in the morning, Lord, I miss you so. That's how I know I found a home. That's how I know I found a home. Well, hear the mountains singing, Lord, I can feel the ringing, darling, at your name. Tell me if you know just how that river flows down to the sea.
Good evening out there. Media land. You're in your proper place. I in mine. Doing a remote tonight from an actual retreat for large birds. There are many eggs involved. And that's right, this is WZBC. Solid Gold Radio. Mainlining it to you. Straight to the midbrain and on in. In and around 90.3 on the megahertz, if you're counting, as per usual. New metaphysics time. Yara Geiserman. At the joystick. In complete control. In losing control. Out of control. Looking for love on the radio. Till 2, in fact, probably a little later than that tonight, since Sarah is ill. So probably no Urban Underground. She'll be back next week. As shall I, of course, at 10 o'clock. Some Tim Buckley a while back. From Happy Sad. Old vinyl. About old things. In this time-space continuum we live in. Points of departure. Parallax view. Multitasking. In the artistic theme department, already established. Beachheads in place, my friends. Now, the invasion shall in fact begin in earnest. So as I've repeated in the past, if you need to do so, please get out of the line of fire. Step away from your wireless receiver and have someone readjust the frequency reception. Or watch TV. Or sit with a sick friend or meticulously fold newspapers for a few hours. But do remove yourself from this frequency. That you just did. All right, very good. 552-4686 for source material. Copyright infringements or other excesses of the plagiaristic mind. right, I gotta go. I got something burning.
For the meritocracy, for people like the J.P. Morgan executive who says they don't have enough money for services for the poor, only services for the rich. Of course, there are people who have to do the dirty work, but they can live in favelas, as they'd be called if they were in Brazil, you know, miserable suburbs around the edge where they can sort of find their way into work somehow to clean the streets and, you know, do the laundry and whatever has to be done. But meanwhile, New York will be for the meritocracy, the guys with the good salaries. So therefore, the policies are, as Giuliani and the Times explain, to deprive people of rent, of heating, of money for heating their houses, for food, transport, home care for the disabled and elderly and so on, just cut all that stuff. And then they can just go somewhere else if they can find somewhere else to go. The headline for all of this reads as follows. Welfare cuts provide a chance to move. Okay? So in other words, the poor are no longer trapped by welfare dependency. Thanks to their liberator, who they now have a chance to move. The compassion really brings tears to the eyes. There's a technical name for this. It's called tough love. Which is sort of appropriate. It means love for the rich and tough for everybody else. Another term for that is the free market, you know, which means plenty of protection for us, but you guys accept market discipline. What about, to go to the other extreme, say Cobb County, Georgia, interesting place, represented by Newt Gingrich. So there's no tough love for Cobb County, Georgia, not at all. Well, maybe there shouldn't be. If you read, again, Pulitzer Prize-winning correspondent of the Boston Globe, David Shreveman, he explains that Gingrich is really a pretty nice guy. He's not like these bad guys who think we ought to get rid of government and so on. Gingrich, he says, is the nation's leading champion of independence and of the solitary entrepreneur. Okay, that's Newt Gingrich. Well, the biggest solitary entrepreneur in Cobb County is Lockheed Martin, very high up on the, that's the highest employer, way high up in Fortune 500. That's a recent merger of two major taxpayer-funded corporations. I mean, they're private in the sense that the profit is private, but they're public in the sense that the payment is public. It's known as conservatism, sort of thing. They were merged recently. Lockheed and Martin Marietta were merged into an even bigger corporation. And in order to help expedite the merger, the Clinton administration gave them an extra $1 billion of taxpayer funding. And then to kind of sweeten the pain for the, you know, executives who were involved in the merger, they gave them $30 million in an extra subsidy, including $8 million for the new CEO. They were feeling, you know, kind of tough to undergo this merger, so you need a little bit of love, taxpayer love on the side. Well, that's the way it works. Welfare for corporate America, way beyond what anybody calls corporate welfare. This is the real stuff. And it's corporate America, as General Paul says, is going to transition our work, meaning they'll take care of carrying out this policy of using taxpayer funds to build the F-22 with dual-use technology, meaning the rest of the Fortune 500 can milk the taxpayer, too, to keep those profits high. That's the main reason why the Pentagon is staying at Cold War levels. Thank you.
The clouds come in, the rolling over me. I'm waiting for the storm to break again. Waiting for the thunder and the rain.
Negative K, nothing further, just City Cambie on the corner.
Hey, Echo, final arrival.
Hi, 10 flight, 62, 1090.
I shot my father with a handgun. He wasn't killed, though. I was made fun of for doing this by others. My father was coming at me, so self-defense. I don't think it was my real father, though. I'm walking in a park and notice a concert of some kind has just ended and people are walking. I hear and then see Sam, an old friend of mine, and with him Peter, another old friend, and several of the people in the cult that I was in. I seem to be persona non grata. Finally, I go to Peter and he says they have to be going. I feel relieved and only a little sad. Mainly, I feel bittersweet. I'm in jail. First I'm watched by a man and then temporarily by a woman. I could escape, but I'd get her in trouble, so I don't. The man intimidates me with burning some newspaper on top of some cabinets. My father is a giant ship coming up an estuary, and I am a small person working hard on some project. He is authoritarian. At the end of this episode, the ship goes back up the estuary. Life is a cabaret. I have to watch. My life is as a customer. My father and I are among a people who live in the desert. A friendly desert with an ocean of fresh drinking water. It is a delicate balance, though. We mix a drink that is to be rationed. I was part of a group that is doing a package personal change project. I could feel my resistance very clearly. This episode kept repeating itself like an obsessive-compulsive situation. Bad spleen, perhaps? I want to show people I can levitate, but in so doing, and being naked, I accidentally defecate shit as I am turning in midair. I immediately am embarrassed and try to cover up by clutching the shit with my hand. A man is paralyzed from an injury and is pulled along by a couple to safety. He needs to raise his head to drink or something. I'm watching this. I am not the man.
In this case. We talk briefly about Van Etter and about all of his big lies. His lies become very important because he's the co-lead investigator in this case. From the very beginning, he was lying.
Professor Kingfield is telling me that in order to apply for entry in a certain group, I should come to the Whale's Tooth entrance on Thursday and allow another person to see me and judge how my heart blockage will affect my creative ability, what I'll want to do. The professor's tone reveals the sincerity beneath the crust, and this is clear to me. He is ready to be crusty and is thinking which pub will be handiest.
Who in here believed that? Do you really think he's going to come back in here and we're going to believe that O.J. Simpson was no more a suspect than Robert Shapiro? That's what he told you. Big lies. You can't trust him. You can't believe anything he says because it goes to the core of this case. When you're lying at the beginning, you'll be lying at the
one man and one woman win a contest for spiritual seekers. They travel around the world on a tramp steamer.
We've known that all along.
But I think the committee is undetermined as to whether they should be alone or not.
The two of them need to be paired together because they are twins of deception, Furman and Van Etter.
Of my servants, but I had a cross for him.
Go ahead.
I had nails for him.
Copious eating of Advil from a large bowl.
I had them to pierce his side, but I loved him more than anybody else. Why, God? Why did you do it? Why? He said, I did it!
Hera counsels me that just because in a movie the actor does something and then later a bad thing might happen to him, not to assume the first thing caused the bad thing. They just were before and after. No guilt or retribution involved. I hear this, but forge ahead anyway.
Even though he descended into hell.
I am now somewhat friendly with these people, approximately two guys and one girl, and ponder that this car is a better car than the last. I try to examine how I sense this and know how it's better. I figure it's different on a subtle plane, in my mind that is, not in a conventional way.
be able to use your night dreams, to be able to pierce that veil, to smash, to shatter that glass, there are several preambles, several things we need to look at, several things that you need to begin to understand and to let in. Our search begins by understanding why you dream in the first place. Why is it that 90 minutes after you go to sleep, after you've reached the deepest levels of sleep and fulfilled that function, your brain begins to be active again, and in its activity releases this high charge, this high voltage electricity randomly from the brain stem? Why does that happen? Certainly that phenomenon will cause a release of chemicals and will cause the release of memories, old and new, of fragments of thought and feeling. But why does it happen? Why does this go on? And the first reason among many is that you dream because dreaming repairs and maintains and grows the stuff of reality. Whether you know the stuff of reality or not, whether you know or are attempting to become conscious of creating a reality or not, dreams maintain, they repair, and they grow the stuff of your reality. We've talked of the stuff of reality so frequently, but what dreams do is they mediate conflict and contradiction within the raw materials. The raw materials, your beliefs and attitudes, your thoughts and feelings, your decisions and your choices. That's the raw material out of which you manifest, out of which you create, out of which you bring about this illusion of yours. And there are often conflicts between what you believe and what your thoughts and feelings are, between an attitude and certain choices and decisions, between the choices and decisions and your feelings and thoughts. There is conflict, there is contradiction, and it is in the dream world, it is in the dream realm, while you sleep, that these contradictions, these conflicts are mediated among the raw material of the reality you create. Also, the tools. Here is where the tools are sharpened and replenished. The tools which you know so well, imagination, desire, expectation, they get exhausted. You imagine, some of you, and you imagine, and you imagine, and you imagine, and you get so tired, you get so exhausted, you spend your current supply, the current reservoir of imagination, until you imagine so much, I can't imagine anything anymore, I just can't. And you desire until you can taste it, until you're salivating, a desire until I can't desire anything more, I'm just totally spent. And you expect, and you often find those expectations get bruised and wounded, and you lose your expectations, they get dashed, and you get so battered in your daily routine. But every night your dreams sharpen your imagination, sharpen your desire and expectation, and replenish each of these reservoirs, so that each morning, if you desire, each morning you can reawaken fresh and brand new with a whole new reservoir of imagination, desire and expectation, sharpened and replenished tools. Dreaming is what happens, this electrical release, this phenomena in the body. What it does is it heals and repairs the generating energies, heals and repairs trust, heals and repairs value, heals and repairs happiness and joy, heals and repairs gratitude. So often in that sense you need to sleep on it. And when you wake up in the morning, your levels of trust, though maybe not mighty, are stronger. And you feel a certain gratitude, which unfortunately may be dashed by noon, but nonetheless. And a happiness and joy that before you figure out how miserable your life is again, you feel. It heals and repairs the generating energies, and it heals and strengthens the sustaining energies of ownership, of discipline, of intimacy, and of love. Often when you're in love, you wake up the next morning feeling it deeper, and often get angry because you're loving more than you thought you would, but nonetheless, often you awaken feeling that sort of somnambulistic intimacy, a sense of discipline and order in your life, a sense of ownership, because dreams have repaired and strengthened. You're generating and the sustaining energies as well. Dreams maintain, repair, and grow the stuff of reality. Also, secondly, dreams maintain, repair, and grow the body. Yes, that's what dreaming does. It is essential. You must dream. Doesn't matter whether you remember them as far as this function is concerned, but that you do it. Now, we have talked on numerous occasions how infants sleep most of the time, not because they're tired. What do they do when they're awake? They eat and eliminate. And they sleep, not because they're tired, but because they need to develop. You see, when the human being stood erect, the changing shape of the pelvis made it such that a fetus could not stay in the womb but 9 months. It would grow beyond that, it could not get out. And therefore it had to be born at that particular time, much against its will, and therefore labor to force that body out now, before it's too late. I want to stay. You can't stay. But you see, the brain isn't fully developed. The nervous system, the endocrine system, the digestive system, the lymphatic system, the immune system, none of it is fully developed. And so dreaming, not just sleep, but dreaming, completes the development that should have happened in the womb but cannot. And therefore the womb of sleep, the dreaming takes place to complete this development. But even beyond infancy into childhood, and childhood into the adolescence and into the adult years, it does the same thing. It repairs the immune system, it repairs the lymphatic system, it repairs the nervous system, and continues the development of the brain. That's what dreaming does. And when people are not allowed to dream under scientific investigation, when they are awakened before any dreams begin and never allowed, they go absolutely bananas. They go berserk. They go crazy. They get sick and you die. You die. Not of any particular disease necessarily, but because of the absence of dreams. You must dream because it repairs, it maintains, and it heals and develops and grows the body. Beyond that, the very chemical releases, the electrical and chemical releases, cleanse and heal the body each and every night. What happens when that electrical energy is released? It cleanses the neurons, it cleanses the synapses, the axons, and the neural transmitters and receivers are all stimulated and charged. When those chemicals are released, it tests the body's function. Heart rate increases, then slows down. Breathing increases, then slows down. Each chakra center is activated and then slows down. It's like a nightly diagnostic to see what is functioning and what isn't functioning. And when something isn't functioning properly, you will dream a dream about it to either heal it or to alert. Hoo-hoo, hey, over here. Something's not working right. But it is a way of testing the body systems, testing the mechanics of your function, the involuntary body function, to make sure it's operating properly. It is also a way of flushing emotional toxins, the anxieties, the fears, the repressed angers, the suppressed feelings can be flushed in the dream state, often called nightmares. It also flushes chemical toxins. The cortisone in the form of cortisol that develops, the serotonin, though valuable in excess, can be detrimental. Even the endorphins, though valuable in excess, can be detrimental. And often the dream state is used to flush them out of the body, quite physically, as well as emotionally and mentally. Fourthly, dreaming sharpens your thinking. It sharpens your feeling. It sharpens your creativity and your imagination and your intuition. Again, often it is you work well into the night and you are admonished and encouraged, please stop, go to sleep, start fresh in the morning, it'll come to you then, sleep on it. And often it will. You'll wake up with a renewed sense of creative energy, of thinking sharper and feeling more sharply. Because that's what dreaming does. It sharpens your thinking, replenishes and sharpens your thinking, feeling, your creativity, your imagination, and your intuition. These four functions from repairing, maintaining, and growing the stuff of your reality, repairing, maintaining, and growing the body, healing and chemically flushing emotionally and flushing the body, and that of sharpening your thinking, feeling, imagination, creativity, and intuition. Beyond that, dreaming is also an opportunity, opening a door for coded communication from your higher self, for your unconscious that will erupt if not allowed to ooze into your reality, for your soul, for your spirit, for God, Goddess, all that is, to send you a coded message. A message that is coded so that it can slip and slide by your subconscious mind without too much deviation. That is coded so that it can slip by your negative ego, who would otherwise want to capture it. Messages clinging to these fragments of thought, these fragments of emotion, clinging to these memories, old and new, clinging to these stories that are woven like Odysseus to the belly of a sheep to get past the cyclops of your negative ego. Your negative ego is dumb. It doesn't understand the coded messages and therefore lets them pass on by. Your higher self, your soul, your spirit, God, Goddess, all that is, the Goddess herself, sending you healing, teaching, guidance on the bellies of sheep in the dreams. You see, that's why the coded messages are not really as abstract as many academicians want to believe. Because your higher self is not trying to be literary. It's trying to communicate. It just has to code the message enough to get by your ego, to slip through your subconscious with its constrictions and its conditions. So it's not looking for the most abstract, the most bizarre. It's looking for a way to reach you. And that's why often the messages come as clichés. Interpretations become obvious when you know how to speak the language of the mind. But this fifth reason, so valuable, so important, and the sixth reason you dream, as a safety valve. As a safety valve, because you see, there are many futures out there. You have scads, wonderful word, of futures. From the very best to the very worst, they're all available to you. Some of them are more resonant than others. Some of them are more likely than others. But they are all available to you. And it is in the dream state, while all this other stuff is happening for your body, that your higher self or your unseen friends, the guides, the teachers, the healers sent by God, God is all that is, use this chance to flush out certain realities that need to be released. Certain realities that are played out in dreams so they don't have to be played out in your physical world. Realities that would otherwise be realities that are too close to manifesting, that would be detrimental, that would be hurtful, that would be counterproductive, are often played out in the dream state. So as they don't have to be played out here in the illusion of your physical world. On some of those futures, some of those realities, not to be released but to be rehearsed before they are manifest, so that when they are manifest, you do so with greater aplomb, with greater panache, because it's been done once in the dream state, morphogenically easier to do in the illusion of your reality. The issue is there's a safety valve for realities that need to be released and for realities that need to be rehearsed. Reason that we suggest, although certainly you can find others, dreaming allows the necessary function of future think. We have talked of the function of the brain, we have talked of the function of the frontal lobes, future think, to be calibrating and recalibrating, to be thinking and rethinking of all the future possibilities. When we talked of creating a brilliant future, we talked of the quantum wave of possibility. A wave of energy, a quantum wave that is sent from the now and here, out there, beyond logic, beyond reason, beyond time and space, into the then and there. And that wave of energy in the then and there, called the future, comes back to the now and here. That's how things manifest. That's how this illusion seems so real to you. It is on a quantum wave from the now and here to the there and then and back again. This wave moves from you out beyond time and space, beyond logic and reason, into that which is the future. But also, what is a dream? Whether it occurs at night or whether it occurs in other forms, a dream is something that occurs outside of time and space, outside of logic and reason. And therefore it is dreaming that allows that quantum wave to break through the barrier beyond the topography of logic and reason, of length, width and breadth, beyond that of time and space, into that future, so that it can back to manifest without dreaming. Without dreaming, you could not manifest in your world. You could not create the very floor upon which you are sitting, or the chair upon which you sit is resting, nor the very body that you currently claim as your own. Dreaming is what sends that wave, that into the there and then, that comes back into the now and here, tangibly. This is what dreaming is about. This is why you dream. To maintain, to repair, to grow the stuff of reality, and to manifest it in future think. To grow, to maintain, to repair the body, and to play out reality, to be released or rehearsed, to flush chemically, emotionally, the toxins, even physical toxins, to open to the flood of communication that is waiting for you on the other side, and to strengthen your thinking, feeling, creativity, imagination and intuition. You dream. Everybody does. If you didn't, you wouldn't be here in the reality called physical. Remembering them is another matter, as you well know. But first, the basis, the backdrop, to understand why you dream.
WZBC 90.3 FM in Newton.
like a thousand points of truncated, dripping, colloidal lights, filling you with ineffably indigestible nuggets of obscene and multiculturally unacceptable bits of wisdom and culturally unacceptable bits of wisdom.
A critic loves to see the show, just doesn't know when to say yes and when to say no. But that's because of Beige. You see, Beige has taught Ecru a funny point of view. The true is like false, and false is like true. Who can expect to get anything straight? Like an answer, I mean. From an Ecru that thinks, or thinks that it thinks by the thought it was taught, that love is the same as hate, that shouldn't's the same as should, that dumb is the same as smart, that bad is the same as good. A kind of critical confusion in critic could have complications almost arithmetic. Those of us, are there any? Too many. Who have to know exactly what to do, what to see, what to say, what to think. We'll have to wait until Ecru is ready with his double talking trait to make steady unsteady, calling crooked straight. But what the heck, you know Ecru. Just a freeloading critic who loves to see the show. Just doesn't know when to say yes, or when to say no.
Lovely. Would you like to sit and stare at the big fire?
Okay. It's a really wonderful room.
It is now.
I don't know, Phil. I don't think we should do this.
I don't either. You know, on second thought, I think we shouldn't. It's the perfect end to a perfect day.
Well, it's a little fast for me.
Me too.
Maybe I should go.
Where would you go? Why? We've got a perfect fire. I've got some French poetry here. Baudelaire. C'est fantastique. I will read to you. I got some ice cream over on the windowsill. Hold on a minute. Rocky Road.
Oh, I love Rocky Road.
Yeah, I thought so. You have to stay.
Oh, no, really, Phil. I'm tired. We can see each other tomorrow.
No. Tonight. It's gotta be tonight.
No, Phil, really.
Come on, just stay for a while, and then if you like it, stay for a while longer, and if you like that, stay for a while longer.
Let's not spoil it, okay?
Not spoiling it. I don't want to spoil it either.
You know I can't stay with you.
Why not? I love you.
You love me?
I love you.
You don't even know me.
Oh, I know you.
Oh, no. I can't believe I fell for this. This whole day has just been one long setup.
No, it hasn't.
And I hate fudge. Yuck.
No white chocolate, no fudge.
What are you doing? Are you making some kind of list or something?
No.
Did you call up my friends and ask them what I like and what I don't like?
No.
Is this what love is for you?
No, this is real. This is love.
Stop saying that. You must be crazy. I could never love someone like you, Phil, because you'll never love anyone but yourself.
That's not true. I don't even like myself. Give me another chance.
That's for making me care about you. Terrible. What happened? Rough night?
Yeah.
Okay, campers. Rise and shine. And don't forget your booties, because it's cold out there today. It's cold out there every day.
This country's largest lake, Chapala, is located near the city of Guadalajara.
What is Mexico?
Leslie.
What is Mexico?
Correct.
Lakes and rivers 400.
Seneca is the largest of these lakes in west central New York.
What are the Finger Lakes?
Jim.
What are the Finger Lakes?
Correct.
Lakes and rivers for 600.
This South American lake drains into the smaller lake.
What is Titicaca?
In Bolivia. Jim.
What is Titicaca?
Correct.
Lakes and rivers for 1,000.
Milky colored from glacial clay when entering Lake Geneva, this river is clear blue upon exiting. Jim?
What is the Rhone?
The Rhone. Good for $1,000. You are $500 off the lead right now.
Let's go to Inventors for 200.
What is the Rhone?
The Rhone. Good for $1,000. This is pitiful. 1,000 people freezing their butts off waiting to worship a rat. What a hype. 1,000 people.
Not like they used to mean something in this town. They used to pull the hog out and they used to eat it.
You're a hypocrite.
Not like they used to mean something in this town. They used to pull the hog out and they used to eat it.
You got a problem with what I'm saying, Larry? All of you.
Untie your tongue and you come out here and talk, huh? Am I upsetting you, Princess? You know, you want a prediction about the weather. You're asking the wrong. Am I upsetting you, Princess?
I'll give you a prediction. It's going to be cold. It's going to be gray. And it's going to last you for the rest of your life. Gray. And it's going to last you for the rest of your life.
Once again, the eyes of the nation have turned here to this tiny village in western Pennsylvania. Blah, 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 blah. There is no way that this winter is ever going to end as long as this groundhog keeps seeing his shadow. I don't see any other way out. He's got to be stopped. And I have to stop him.
Real good, Phil. Real good.
He's out of his gourd.
There's no way out. I just want you to remember we had a good time.
All right.
Thank you.
Savvy. Long time no see. You know, I'd rather see this on TV. Tones it down.
Connection terminated. How rude.
I'll ask you for help.
Can you do that?
Yeah, on some systems. So the more complicated they are, the more they have to help you out. Can you wait here?
Why?
Because these guys can get a little nervous. Jim.
Oh, what?
Hi, Lightning.
I want you to take a look at this.
Hey, what's that?
I wanted Jim to see that.
Wow, where'd you get this?
I was trying to break into Protovision. I wanted to see the program for their new games.
Hey, wait, Jim, I'm not through yet.
The tests that you described today that you did on the three blood samples and the blood stain are exclusionary tests, is that correct?
If you mean by that, yes, we attempt to exclude somebody.
None of these tests can tell you specifically that a particular blood stain was left by a particular person.
That's correct. There's nothing here that would individualize a stain to any one particular person.
So any attempt to analogize this to fingerprints or precise identification of a person would be inaccurate, is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, the tests that you performed produce some sort of a product or result that other people can look at and interpret besides yourself?
In the case of the electrophoresis test, yes, we photographed the results.
Photograph the plate on which the test is performed.
That's correct.
But only a very optimistic view of man and his development would have permitted the kinds of extreme innovation that we have developed in, say, the past 1,000 years. His view is that medieval technology, which is the beginning of modern science and so on, could only have been possible under the extreme optimism of Christianity. But all pagan cultures would have frowned upon it very early.
This has something to do with the belief in the perfectibility of human nature, I suppose.
Partly perfectibility, also the idea that man deserves to be relieved from all the burdens possible by his own powers. Any of his powers are good. Anything he can do with his own powers to make life more livable is good. This is not a doctrine acceptable in other cultures, which take a much dimmer view of human activity.
The answer, in my opinion, is accurate. The whole blood samples tend to be easier to analyze than a stain.
State and spell your name for the record.
Irwin L. Golden. IRWINGOLDEN.
My basic anger is misconceptions. My basic anger is people I've heard that I followed the case.
Dr. Golden, you are a physician licensed to practice medicine in the state of California, are you not?
Yes.
And, sir, you are now employed by the Los Angeles County Department of the Coroner, is that correct?
Yes.
Dr. Golden, would you tell us what your job title is with the LA County Department of the Coroner?
I am a deputy medical examiner.
And would you describe for us, please...
As a deputy medical examiner, I am a physician specialist, and my duties are to perform autopsies on the decedents that come under our jurisdiction and to determine the cause and manner of death.
Sir, how long have you worked?
I would say approximately... Well, it's more than 5,000. Somewhere in the mid 5,000 autopsies. It appeared to be bloodstained.
Was it still damp or dry blood?
Well, it appeared to be partially damp.
And as part of your autopsy procedure, sir, did you cause the clothing to be removed?
The clothing was removed for photography purposes, and also the clothing had to be dried and preserved as evidence.
In the chair that was the legacy of Thurgood Marshall, a freedom fighter for African peoples, who is a Tom beyond Toms, called Thomas, on his knees to white folks. Put that on CNN. We're not worried about the Supreme Court now, because the Supreme Court just turned down our appeal to the Supreme Court. Now we can tell the truth. Ain't no lawyers holding me back now. Thomas! Thomas! Uncle Thomas! Uncle Thomas! 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 Uncle Thomas! Thomas! Thomas, Uncle Thomas! But let's get serious, brothers and sisters, because we're not dealing with a fool. We're dealing with a product of a system. He was created, manufactured, he has been imposed upon us, and let's get smart. In that whole scenario of Uncle Tom's cabin, Uncle Tom was trying to survive. The real definition of negativity was Sambo. What we have on the Supreme Court is Sambo time. Sambo time. Who will do anything to ingratiate himself with white folks?
Now, to shatter that glass, to smash your way through, to pierce the veil, to penetrate that barrier. There are four different things. Four different avenues, if you will, four different approaches, all vital. The first is remembering, obviously. You don't literally have to remember every dream to have it have impact upon you, clearly not. But to use your night dreams, to use them to generate and create greater success. Certainly, remembering them is important. Now, you can use the old standbys. As we say, the technique is valuable. It works. I will remember a dream tonight. I will remember a dream tonight. I will remember a dream tonight. And you probably will. But you'll remember it passively. You'll approach that glass once again, pressing your nose against it, waiting, 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 and hopefully a dream will come. You can even go so far as to say, I'll have a problem-solving dream, I'll have a problem-solving dream, but when? I need it tonight. I've got to give them an answer tomorrow. I can't go in and say, hey guys, I'm sorry, I can't tell you yet what I'm going to do here because I haven't had a dream yet, you see. Hasn't come yet. I'm waiting though. Every night I'm up there, press the glass, please, please, please. Cross my fingers, cross my toes, hope, hope, hope. It hasn't happened yet. So I can't tell you whether I'll take that promotion or not. I can't tell you whether I'll do this or not. I can't tell you what the next step is because I haven't had my dream yet. Well, they'll figure out what to do with you. I need that problem solving dream now. And I need to remember it tonight. Not sometime in the next month or two, next year or two. Now. You can use the tried and true methods, but we suggest some variations, okay? That will facilitate your remembering, but also in that remembering, facilitate you piercing the veil. And the techniques we describe thusly. The first we call touch technique. And we offer two variations. A touch technique. And while you have learned your self-hypnotic suggestions of I will remember, what we suggest is this. To one technique, variation number one. Touch your forehead at that position that you call your third eye. Touch it with one finger or with a couple of them. To touch here with enough pressure to feel your presence. Not to leave impressions, but to feel your presence. And then make yourself hypnotic suggestion while you touch here at the forehead. Then, moving down with your index finger and middle finger, only because it's convenient, to gently rest them upon your closed eyes. Rest them upon the lids of your closed eyes, ever so gently, not to see stars, but to feel just the presence of your fingers, and again make your hypnotic suggestion. Then with one finger, whichever one you desire, below the nose but yet above the lip, right there, right at the very base of where the nostrils touch, right there in the center, press with a significant enough force that you can feel it in your upper jaw. And make your hypnotic suggestion. So the first technique, first touch technique, variation number one, to touch your forehead, I will remember a dream tonight. Then with index finger and middle finger, touch your eyelids simultaneously, I will remember a dream tonight. And then just below your nose, above your upper lip, press with a significant pressure, I will remember a dream tonight. And then go to sleep. That additional touch will not only facilitate the otherwise passive remembrance, but will allow you to more easily pierce the veil, to enter the realm, to chase after, to capture your dreams, not just remember them. Variation number two of the touch technique is this. With the similar hypnotic suggestions that you plan to make as you're about to drift off to sleep, to with your index finger or middle finger or both of them, to right below your eye, if you feel your eye below it, there's the bottom bone of your skull, that of the bottom half of your eye socket, right there in the center, either side, left or right, depending upon which hand you use, right there, to either create some pressure by tapping. It is an area similar to or connected to that of the thymus gland, not the thalamus, but the thymus, to tap or to create little circles, to tap or create circles, whatever. This area along the lower socket, lower eye socket, right about in the center, that's why if you use two fingers, you're bound to get it, right in that area to tap or to make circles as you make your statement. Then you come down from there to this area in your neck. Now, as your neck comes down, you feel the larynx coming here. There's the bone, the clavicle bone, the shoulder bone that's here. And right in the middle, there's that little U-shaped sort of dip that's there. Some of you, it's more prominent than others. On either side of that U-shape, sort of the top portion of the U, where the bone comes up and then moves across the body, right there, right at that corner, that's the next place that you either tap or make a circular motion, and you make your hypnotic suggestion again. Now, this is a kidney point for those that are aware of the meridians of the body. This is a kidney point. Either side, again, whatever is most comfortable. Right there. You tap, making your mental statement, or you make a circular motion, making your mental statement. Now, if you have touched your right eye, and you have touched this right point at your throat, just off center, just not there in the middle, now not there, just off one side or the other. If you've touched on the right side, the eye, and then this area of the clavicle, then you move to the left side of the body, to below the shoulder, below the collarbone. There's a slight little depression above the breast, above the chest area, above the pecs, right there. Slight little depression. In here you make a rotating motion, a circular motion. Not so much tapping, but circular motion here, as you make your hypnotic suggestion. So variation number two is also three points, three different points, below the eye to tap as you make your suggestion, up the throat to the left or right of center, right upon that bone where it comes to a corner there, to make a suggestion, and then to go to the opposite side, to that indentation above the breast and chest area, below the shoulder bone, to make a circular motion as you make your statement. Now, if you do that again, the statement there, but it's the touching of these particular points that gives the body the message that you not only want to remember, but you want to remember with significance. Both these variations, either one of the variations, whichever works for you, is the touch technique. A second technique is one we have talked about before, and that is the restructuring of water. Water is very fluid, as you well know. And what you do is you get a glass. We recommend a glass, but plastic if you must, but a glass that you fill full, not to the brim, but three quarters full of water. Then as you sit beside the bed at night and you're going to work with this to restructure the water, the hydrogen and oxygen atoms are very loosely connected and they break apart and reconnect very easily. And so they are very responsive to electricity. That's why if you drop your toaster in the bathtub, you're, well, it's a significant call. Yes. But as you have your glass of water, three quarters full, what you're going to do is you're going to sit there with it on your nightstand or whatever in that way, and you're going to cup your hands around it. Now, when you cup your hands, you put your fingertips close, but do not touch them. You put the heels of your hand close, but do not touch it, just a bit apart. And then what you do is you send energy down your right hand, perhaps you allow it to go into the top of your head, down into your heart, overflowing your heart and flowing down your right hand and then into your left hand and back up your left hand, back into your heart center and around the body in this regard, as you're charging the water with, I'm going to remember a dream tonight, I'm going to remember my dreams tonight, or whatever your hypnotic suggestion might be. You're focusing on the water and you're focusing on the energy flowing, electrical energy, perhaps it's light if you want to imagine it as such, flowing out of your right hand into your left hand. Now, if you touch your fingers, if you touch the heels of your hand, the electrical charge will take the course of least resistance and therefore circle the water, which may have some impact, but not significant enough. That's why do not touch your fingers, do not touch the heel of hand. Therefore, the energy will transmit from this parabolic of your cupped right hand into the parabolic of your cupped left hand through the water, thus restructuring it. Any of you who have ever done this can be marveling and amazed at the fact that the water tastes different. It has a heavier, more glycerin-like significance or substance quality to it once you've restructured it, and therefore you restructure it in this capacity with the desired dream. Once you have done this, it doesn't take long, traveling with energy out of your right hand into your left hand. Now, for some of you, it's going to seem more natural to flow the energy out of your left hand into the right hand, and that's okay. Always remember this rule. always, always, always flow energy from the right hand into the left hand unless you flow energy from the left hand into the right hand. All right? Doesn't matter. Whatever works. Then what you do is you drink half the water, approximately half. You don't have to be exact, but approximately half the water, and go to sleep. When you wake up in the morning, drink the rest of the water. Now, some of you may want to use this restructuring of water technique in combination with the touch technique. You might want to restructure the water, and you might want to dip your fingers in the water and then do your various touching. Dip your fingers in the water and then do your various touching. To combine them, whatever works uniquely for you. But the restructuring of water is the second way in which to remember with significance.
Haven't gotten in trouble yet. A lot of trouble with Reagan, though. Can't trust him. A lot of good people got hurt. Well, back to the airport.
Thank you. Yourself. Had to. Turquoise, don't you know how simple you are? Don't you know what effect you're having on everything? See the flash of you? Turquoise. There. By her gliding through the light, and by such swifts and shifts of sleight. Also, there you go. All streaks of turquoise blur. Definitely so. And here a turquoise all tender, trembling like water. What do you think of a turquoise like that? Then, there's this turquoise. And that turquoise. Oh, turquoise, you shouldn't have. Of course you did. Couldn't help yourself. Had to. Isn't that right? Oh, there's something that you can tint. Turquoise.
because at that point we could monitor any phone line in the country, and basically there was no need for hacking at that point because you can see everything.
Did you have a personal code about what kind of breaking in was acceptable and what wasn't?
Yep. I felt that that like any computer was fair game, and I felt that hacking was illegal. However, it was just that I was just really good at it. But there was some limits, and one of the limits was like credit fraud and like toll fraud. I tried to avoid those things at all costs. I did avoid credit fraud. I never really because I felt as we moved toward a creditless society, I mean a moneyless society, and you know that's based on credit. You know, there's a lot of services that are offered with that, and a lot of those services wouldn't be available if credit was undermined. And you know, by doing, you know, damaging other people's credit is usually the small guy that gets hurt. You know, the average person, you know, like even like somebody like my mom could get, you know, affected by credit fraud and have to shell out bucks. So that's why I always stayed away from those sort of things. But like just the pure, you know, challenge of breaking into computer systems and learning how to program them and programming them and operating them, you know, to their full capacity is was stimulating.
How did you learn about computers?
Oh, I learned about computers because I got lucky, because my mom is a school teacher, and she had a friend there who was into computers, like had an old Apple. And, you know, when I would come there after school, she would let me play with it and touch it and, you know, mess with it. It was kind of clever.
So how old were you when you got your own computer?
It's kind of way back, but I think it was like around 12, maybe. Maybe a little bit. Yeah, 12. 12. I did get a Commodore 64 at 12.
How did you cobble together enough sophisticated equipment to become a hacker?
Well, the funny thing is that you don't need sophisticated equipment. You only need a dumb terminal. You just need a monitor and a keyboard and a modem, which doesn't require like a hard drive or anything like that, because when in the beginning I never had those things, and then when I did have enough money to get them, I didn't need them because all I did was really like hack and stuff. So you don't really need sophisticated equipment. You can get a dumb terminal from Radio Shack for like maybe $10, and then a follow up a modem for maybe another couple of bucks, and then you're straight.
I read about you that you actually like scavenged a lot of equipment.
Oh yeah, sure.
How'd you find it? Where would you go?
I mean, sometimes you'd see it thrown out from like telephone companies and universities and stuff, or sometimes, you know, someone would sell something for really cheap. You might buy it, but most of the time, you know, you can scrounge it up, and they're like throwing it out, and they don't realize that they could possibly fix it. I know that there's like several companies now that do stuff to, you know, they ask corporations for those computers they're gonna throw out and refurbish them, and you know, I guess they give them to schools and stuff like that.
I guess it's not. Can you tell me about the first time that you actually broke into a computer system? How you got in? What it felt like to you?
That's a good feeling. I remember the first time I dropped in after breaking into a system. It felt so good. It was sort of like a real good back rub, like on the verge of like orgasmic pleasure. I don't know how to explain it. It was like a tingly feeling all over. And well, I hope nobody else gets addicted. It's very addictive, because it's funny, the first time it's like that. I did get numb all over, and you know, and of course it was almost like a drug, because eventually as I broke into computers, you know, I kept searching for new highs, you know, more challenging computers. So I had to, you know, eventually just try to break into everything, looking for that magic high the first time.
Now, how did you find other hackers?
Most of the time, sometimes you'd meet them in the weirdest places, you know. You would just be, like, somewhere, you know, messing with a computer, and, you know, they'd come along, and, you know, you'd talk, and then eventually, you know, you'd find out, you know, like, kind of how, you know, they felt about certain issues, and the next thing you know, you probably reveal your identities to each other. And then, you know, there's other situations where I've run into computer hackers on, like, systems. Like, I remember one time I met this kid, on a system from Japan, and he was like a hacker, and he had like never met any other computer hackers, and like, you know, he was like Japanese, and he was like kicking it and stuff, and he was mad cool, and he was pretty good too, and you know, became friends and stuff like that, and strictly met on like this system that we had both hacked, you know?
You were in the Masters of Deception.
This is true.
A gang in cyberspace. Did you know each other only from speaking online, or did you meet together geographically, too?
At first, we just used to meet online. Then eventually, we met in person. I mean, we met in so many... It's hard to say, because we met in so many different ways, like, just overlapping. Like, I remember I had changed high schools, and so did Fiber Optic, Marco Bennett, and we wound up at the same... alternative high school in Manhattan, and it was just, you know, complete. I mean, that was just complete, you know. Who could imagine that we would just meet like that, you know? And then but I had met him before that. It's just that I had never met him in person, and of course then we became like friends and stuff at the time.
You were busted by the Secret Service with the help of telephone company investigators. Did you expect that you would eventually be discovered?
Well, the funny thing is, we knew that they were coming for like months on end due to like secret documents that they provided for us, you know. Well, they didn't know they were providing them, but we knew. But it was like, you know, it was like we all had to make a decision whether, you know, we wanted to do this for the rest of our lives. Did we want to go on the run and just do this forever, or did, you know, never see like my moms again or something like that? Or should we just sit there and wait for them to come? And, you know, obviously the decision was made to just say, well, you know, they're coming, so.
So you pled guilty.
Mm-hmm.
You were, correct me if I'm wrong, you were sentenced to a year, spent 6 months in prison.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like in prison?
Well, I went to boot camp, so it was kind of, you know, like, you know, that paramilitary stuff, you know. I was like squad leader, like I was team leader, so, you know, I got to march everybody around. So it was kind of clever, but we had no TV and no newspapers and...
No computers, probably.
No computers.
Do you feel like you were changed by the prison experience?
No, because I'd already changed before I went in. Because, like, with most federal cases, a lot of times you actually don't go to jail for the crime till like, a couple of years later. Like, in this case, it was, like, 2 years later. And, like, I was in college and had done, like, tons of community service stuff. Not because of the case, but just because I was doing it and just, like, doing, like, positive stuff. And then I got yanked to jail. That happened to all of us, actually. We all had started to do positive stuff, and then we got sentenced. And
I am your shepherd. You shall not want. Lay down before me and all that sort of thing. WCBC in Newton. Factory fresh, just for you, right off the assembly line. Sound products. Yeah.
It's for Addison Gale, for Art Blakey, for all those brothers and sisters who struggle for our democracy. It's called I Am. I Am. Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da. We are being told of the greatness of Western civilization. Yet Europe is not the West. Leave England headed west, you arrive in Newark. The West is the New World, not Europe. The West is El Mundo Nuevo, the Pan-American complexity, as diverse as the roots and history of our collection. The West is the Americas, not Europe. It is the America that the homeboy tells. The sister we can see, your wife, husband, and children, your mama, your friends, your family, your closest enemies are West. The quest, the search for humanity still goes on. But of the Euro-white supremacists, the slave masters, conquistadores, destroyers of pharaonic Egypt, Carthage, invaders, destroyers of Moorish Spain, of African and Asian worlds, creators of the Inquisition, Christ killers, murderers of thousands of Christians in the Colosseum, murderers of Spartacus, Vandals, Germans, ditchmen, Boers, destroyers of Mojarreño, Tenochtitlan, killed Montezuma, Emiliano Zapata, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, even the Kennedys, Bobby Hutton, Fred Hampton, Medgar Evers, the Aztecs, the Incas, the Mayans, the Taino, the Arawak, conquerors of America, enslaving humanity in cannibal menus, Bushmen, living on human flesh as public ritual, ideology of predators and blood-covered claws, murderers of Iraq, would-be destroyers of the ancient Mesopotamian culture, assassins of Sandino, Toussaint Louverture, Patrice Lumumba, enslavers of women, overthrew mother right, killed Socrates, Copernicus, Lincoln, John Brown and Nat Turner, Amilcar Cabral and David Sebeko, who claim civilization and Christianity and philosophy as crucifiers, who worship statues till 300 AD, who destroyed the libraries of Alexandria, the University of Timbuktu, who thought the wind made babies, who say now they are the creators of great civilizations, plagiarists, ignorant imitators claiming geometry and the lever, which existed 1,000 years before they was even here, whose great minds are thieves like Aristotle, con men like Democritus and Anaximander, whose gods are the vanilla ice of Ethiopian originals. Half-dressed cave dwellers, painted blue, Anglos, knife wielders, Saxons, sackers, robbers of ancient civilizations, Vikings, whose gods were drunk and rowdy, robbers like Conan and Woden, punks like Napoleon, who got run out of Haiti by Toussaint and Dessalines, who got bum-rushed out of Russia, whacked out racist monsters, shot the nose and mouth off the Sphinx, so sick and anti-life in history were they, who put Mali and Sangha and all Africa in slave ships for money, whose prophets were numbers, not visionaries, life as a low thing, worshippers of minds, not minds, war lovers, not peacemakers, ink instead of art, death instead of life, dog, they best friend. Ice and snow, not we and no, blood lappers and mammy tappers. They love war so much, they call the history of their civilization the cannon in honor of Marco Polo's trip to China. Should we praise them for Dachau? For the poisoning of David Walker, the genocide of Native Americans, or the concentration camps for Japanese Americans? Perhaps 700 years of Irish colonialism, or Gandhi's murder, the conquest of India, the opium wars, TV sheets for Indians, or the Trail of Tears? So how should we praise them? And what should we call them who style themselves God? Whose New World Order seems old and Miltonic, in that they rule and do not serve? But somehow the term Satan seems too narrow. The word devil is too limiting. But there must be some description, some appropriate horrific we can coin, something that says liar, murderer, maniac, animal. Something that indicates their importance. Thank you very much. Let's give.
HQ report on the tone. WZBC radio. In Newton. Street legal now. New Metaphysics. Gary Geiseman here. Amiri Baraka there. One of the million. The day before the march had the better speakers, in my opinion. John Perkins this Saturday morning on Lucid Sounds with Victor, 10 a.m. It'll be a phone interview, but live. He's the author of The World as You Dream It, Shamanic Teaching from the Amazon and the Andes. Also, the author of Psychonavigation, about time travel. It's John Perkins, another crazy white man studying the shamanic traditions. And Lucid Sounds this Saturday with Victor, 10 o'clock in the morning. Live guest every week, usually with phone questions. He's part of the Whole Life Expo that will be here November 11 and 12 every year at the Park Plaza Hotel in Castle. in an alternate reality, I thought I might have had mice in the attic or squirrels. But I asked them to leave and they did. I like small mammals. They are walking around the clutter in your mental space you do not want. The areas in which you have been choosing to not pay attention to. They know you and are doing you a favor. As you claim, reclaim them, they will happily go their merry munchkin way. These are the raw materials you now seek to align. Frontiers are being crossed right and left as you fret and fritter. The tumor is loose and being eaten by dogs. The walls of your eyes see the new pasture for your flock. Days run into themselves. Bulls of self-belief burn out and are replaced with new ones. Rumblings in the roots splinter their foundations. Senators from the Church of Mind replenish their folds and acquire patronage got well in hand centuries before. These stalwart foes echo the raging grief of semi-iridescent and irregular waves of ripple delight, signaled from beacons before ever they slept. Their new abode made ready and then spent. So, convoluted as they are, they shine and speak so clearly. They spell it out. Help me. Then are gone. Explosion of 1,000 arcs of light splattered on the spot where minions of lighter folk prayed for solace. Alas, cast down from 1,000 altars come the guides and angels of relief and sepulchritude. Hereforth, when with sudden chill the choir of seeming stupidity reigns, then can be recognized the ladder to on high. Chatter and wriggle go the smirking girlish giggles, so glad to be brought here for this. Even they know full well the density of choice. So too for you, and merry with the time. Be for cuddling with the draught of 7 times the playwright's tool, and dancing the smirkish crawl of devil's tools.
Nothing else would serve the thing that you want served. Then, maybe, at that point, you would march. But even some people who thought that that was the only thing they could do still wouldn't do it. And I would characterize our people, that is our community of Muslims under the leadership of Imam Muhammad, as those people. Imam Muhammad feels that the money and the preparations being made for such a march would be better served to invest in African-American businesses and get to the matter of improving the dignity and improving the lot of the African-American men by giving them responsible employment and also investing in the life of the community by recognizing and working to give more attention to the African-American businesses that exist present. Now, in addition to that, Minister Louis Farrakhan calls himself, or represents himself, as the spokesman or the representative of the late Honorable Elijah Muhammad. In that role, is confusing to see how he is serving that role, promoting an idea that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad condemned. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was strongly against marching, and his influence on the life of his community and his influence on the life of African American people in general was to detach themselves from the excessive authority of whites in their life, authority over their everyday lives, and also in terms of approval of what they're doing. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad wanted to separate them from that, that you should be governing your own life, and that you should see that the only approval that you need is approval from God who created you, and the same God that created the white man, and the same God that the white man seeks approval from. So there is some confusion and some difficulty for us seeing Farrakhan in his role of being the representative of Honorable Elijah Muhammad promoting such a thing. Also, it's difficult also for us to acknowledge or feel comfortable with Minister Farrakhan leading such a march, which he says is also for moral atonement. I wouldn't want to question his individual self or his personal self, but I would want to question his public self, in that it's hard for us to join someone who himself is publicly disobeying the fundamentals of his religion, the fundamental ideas of his own religion. He says he's a Muslim, and it's clear what Muslims believe and what Muslims accept and what they reject, and he's in violation of those things. So, for many different reasons, we have a very strong difficulty in joining this march. But
I myself would choose magic, because you can't fix the old floor no more. Radical politics was the last act of that play, and that play is over. Time to build a new one from scratch. Or from vision. So don't even bother yourselves about politics, except as a form of self-study, feedback mechanism.
You can see your relatives, still in black and white, the system is not perfected. The video points at him in his room while you say hello to him from the lobby. Meanwhile, the flowers are being delivered by a foreign-born nurse. She hasn't been exposed to the visual medium as long as the guests, and she can still take it, the flowers and the illness. So, this is perhaps the universe we are all growing into and dying into, and we might as well be aware of it. I am very much aware of it when I am among my students. They are not to be blamed for it. No one in particular is to be blamed for it. Maybe this is the way, simply, the Western man has developed. But let's, for one final moment, come back to the fate of the novelist, the ultimate freak. One, of course, doesn't know for whom one writes. There's no way of knowing. The critics are the artists on their own. Their reaction to one's work is something which is not necessarily directly connected with one's work. They, again, they are created in their own right. They may like it or dislike it. However, they operate on the same level of literary perception. The novelist's task, therefore, is in many ways a lonely one. He never knows how he communicates. He never knows whether he communicates. The 3,000 copies, that's not much. But even if it's 4 million, you still don't know how many people simply bought the book, glanced at it, and were not able to read it. In a paperback country, buying a pocketbook doesn't mean much. It's not much money. Someone might have opened the book, read the first 5 to 10 pages, and dropped it. Someone might have read it without really perceiving it in any way. So there's no way of knowing. This
the white man, a.k.a. the cracker, the peckerwood, the devil, the beast, Satan, Lucifer, Beelzebub. The guy goes by many names. The guy goes by many names.
for Bullets Over.
Thank you for believing me in me and giving me my start, for being a guiding influence in my work, and being a good friend. Thank you very much.
About 2 o'clock, New Metaphysics continues. Your mission may be canceled, but this mission continues until further notice. Here from Newton, WZBC Radio, make of it what you will.
Okay.
similarly with this, and still part of this second technique, some of you may want to use, rather than the water and liquid form, may want to use crystal. And therefore, to pick a crystal, it need not be expensive. A crystal, often a sphere or a candle, a generating crystal, that you're going to use as your dream crystal, again, to charge it, not by touching your fingers, but by cupping them about the crystal to charge it in that way, and set it on your nightstand as you go to bed at night, and know that its generating energy will produce the remembrance of dreams. Again, you may want to combine this, touching your forehead, touching your eye, touching below your nose with that crystal, or touching below the eye at the clavicle area and at that area just below the shoulder bone to touch there with the crystal. But again, use what variations feel right to you. Two techniques with two variations, touch technique, variation one and two, restructuring technique, either one, the water, two, a crystal. A third approach. For those of you who have established an alliance with your subconscious, and as we've talked in various weekends, as we've talked recently here in an intensive about establishing an alliance with your subconscious mind, some of you have a very strong alliance there, and therefore you may wish to use a very simple but yet powerful way of remembering your dreams to pierce the veil. And that is simply, as you lie there ready to go to sleep, foregoing touch techniques, foregoing restructuring techniques, you simply talk to your subconscious mind and you simply say, I want to find a place inside of me. I want to find a place inside of me where I'll have this kind of dream, or where I'll have that kind of dream. I want to find a place inside where I will have, well, I will remember a dream, or I will remember this kind or that kind of dream. I want to find a place, to find a place. I instruct my subconscious to find a place inside me. Now, you may find yourself focusing on your left shoulder. That's a strange place. But nonetheless, if that's what's there, that's where you focus your consciousness until and as you go to sleep. Maybe it's your right knee. What a stupid place to remember a dream. But nonetheless, if that's the place inside of you that your subconscious knows that you'll remember such and such a kind of dream, then that's the place to go. For some of you, this technique isn't going to work, and so don't use it. But if you have a strong alliance with your subconscious, you may find that that technique of simply saying, I will find a place inside of me, and then finish the sentence. The fourth approach, one that works incredibly well, is what we call the dream disc. Now, some of you who have worked with us have created, remember, a crimson disc, deep crimson with a stain of crimson in the center and a golden fleck that you have learned to carry in your throat, your forehead, or your heart, and to let it emerge and grow. Well, you can use that disc if you so desire. And if you don't know what we're talking about because you weren't there for that particular weekend or intensive, that's all right. What this is that you, with the assistance of your higher self, create a disc, the size perhaps of what used to be a silver dollar, perhaps no thicker, of whatever color you choose, whatever color seems right, a disc. And this disc, that size, is to be placed within your throat, or within your heart, or within your forehead, one of those chakra centers for safekeeping. Upon this disc, a symbol, a dream symbol, a line drawing, a sigil, some abstract but simple drawing that to you signifies dreaming. And as you lie there in bed at night, in the dark and in the quiet, you let this disc emerge from wherever it is stored, in your heart, your throat, or forehead. You let it emerge and float above you, parallel to the bed, parallel to your prone body. And you let it grow 4 or 5 or 6 feet across. So now it is this huge disc floating there above you. And then you let it open. In a spiral of opening, you let it open. And then you go to sleep. And then you go to sleep. It's valuable in the morning to close it and put it back, but if you forget, it's not as though you're going to lose it. Some of you have a disc, others of you will want to create one. to use as your dream disc with dream symbol as the fourth way, fourth possible way. Now, the idea here isn't to use all of these techniques. You're not going for overkill. We suggest four with various variations because each of you is unique. Each of you will remember and pierce the veil in your own way. And therefore, which one of these or particular combination or abstract...